Good evening, folks. Today is Tuesday, August 18th, 2015. This is John Friend, and you are listening to The Realist Report here on Renegade Broadcasting. Thank you all for tuning in tonight on this wild card edition, and I'd like to thank Kyle for giving me the opportunity to host my program this evening. Of course, my website is therealistreport.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/realistreport. I also encourage listeners to subscribe to American Free Press, America's last real newspaper, as well as the Barnes Review, the bi-monthly historical review magazine affiliated with American Free Press. Visit AmericanFreePress.net and BarnesReview.org for more details and subscription information. With that said, I'd like to introduce my special guest this evening. His name is John Kaminsky, and he has had a major impact on my thinking and worldview over the course of the past few years. John is one of the most powerful and insightful writers I've encountered on the internet, and it is always a pleasure and an honor to speak with him. John, welcome to the program. How are you this evening?
I'm okay, John. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. It's nice to be back on the air. It's been a while for me. I've kind of taken a little break from hosting my own radio programs. I was somewhat regularly hosting the Wild Card here on Renegade Broadcasting, and I haven't done that for, it's been at least a month or two, I want to say. So it's nice to be back on the air, and it's always nice to speak with you. You're certainly one of my most favorite guests to have on this radio program because we see eye to eye on so many things.
I've
just really learned, you know, a lot over the years reading your essays and speaking with you and listening to you on other radio programs. So yeah, it's nice to have you here. It's been a while since you and I have chatted. So I guess just to start out, what's new? I know you have pretty much a new platform to post your articles and your essays over on RenegadeTribune.com. Why don't you talk about that real quick?
Well, I'm very happy to be there. I'm in. I really appreciate the upgrade in company that I'm among. I'm also very thankful to Andrew at the Rebel for hosting me for so long. But he's had a lot of trouble keeping his website up, deciding which format to use, and I kind of felt in a way a little bit stranded over there, kind of all by myself with just a couple other people. But being thrust into the Renegade milieu, I see all these really terrific names that I'm surrounded by, and I'm honored to be among them.
That's excellent. Glad to hear that. And I also contribute pretty regularly to the Renegade Tribune as well. Yeah. I cross post a lot of, yeah. So a lot of the stuff that you'll see on therealistreport.com, you'll also see up there on the Renegade Tribune. And Kyle's done a great job updating that website. It looks great. It really does. It's easy to navigate. There's all sorts of great material being published there on a daily basis. Great videos, great podcasts, great articles coming from, you know, writers such as yourself, myself, Kyle, and many other people. So it's a very, collaborative effort, and there's all sorts of good material. So I'm sure most people listening are familiar with Renegade Tribune, but for those who are not, be sure to check it out. You can subscribe via email and get updated with all the new articles that appear there. Now, also, I actually upgraded my website as well, and it's been since I've done that, I haven't been on the air, so I figured I'd just briefly mention that. I posted a couple articles kind of announcing it. And I'm sure most people at this point who, you know, have been to my website have noticed that it's much different. It's not much different. It's just an upgrade. To me, it's actually pretty similar to the Renegade Tribune. I really like the way Kyle had that laid out and formatted. And I pretty much tried to do the same thing. It's obviously a little bit different. There's different categories and it's laid out a little bit differently, but it's very similar. And it's actually very similar to my old website. I just think it's just organized a lot better because I'm able to do the different categories now.
Yeah.
And it's easier to navigate. It's easier to find things. It looks a lot better in my view. And Kyle was very helpful, you know, helping me do this, you know, upgrade this website. So I want to thank him and give him a big shout out. And yeah, it looks good. I'm still figuring out some of the features of it. So bear with me, folks. I'm still trying to figure out the newsletter feature. I haven't got that quite figured out, and I really haven't had a lot of time the past few days to sit down and investigate it. But once I get that figured out, people who subscribe should be getting regular updates when I post something new on the website. And also what I'm going to start doing is sort of like a weekly news wrap-up. I'm going to start doing those hopefully like, you know, Saturday, Sunday, and kind of talk about some articles that I've written over the course of the week, some podcasts I've listened to, some videos I've watched, and, you know, just get some general thoughts out there, sort of in a weekly news wrap-up type post. So be on the lookout for that as well.
Is there a function like the Renegade Tribune has when something new comes out, they send you a little email? Do you have that function?
Yeah, actually, if you go over there, there's a way that you can, you know, just enter your email in right there and then click subscribe. Yeah, and there's different ways. I think there's different settings. There's one where you can be notified when each individual post is posted on the website. You'll get an email notification. And then I think there's also a feature where you'll just get a weekly email with all of the posts that have gone up over the course of the week. I believe that's how it works.
Because I never figured out if the Realist Report had that function.
Yeah, you know, my old website did, and how it worked was you'd get an email notification with the entire post in the email, and then obviously a link to the website if you click on the link. And how it would work is if I would post something on my site, it wouldn't be an automatic email that would be generated. It would usually take 24 hours before everybody that subscribed to the site was notified that there is a new post.
Close enough.
So, yeah. So again, it's just something I'm trying to figure out and get all straightened out and working properly. And that'll just, you know, take some time, but I'm very happy with the site. It's doing very well. I've published a number of articles over the course of the past 2 weeks that have got quite a bit of attention. And as you may have guessed, based on the show description and the image I used, I definitely want to talk about Donald Trump because he is all the rave at the moment. And I put up an article. It was really an open letter. I mean, that's what I titled it, an open letter to Donald Trump. And, you know, I had a really short clip I wanted to play to kind of introduce this topic.
Sure.
Just to get people familiar. I mean, you know, most people that are listening to us are familiar with Donald Trump and his talking points and, you know, what he's said at the debates and in his public appearances, his speeches, his rallies, and, you know, how he's handled the media, some of the responses he's given to the media, to the very hostile media, I might add. And I don't know if we're actually able to do that. I'm not sure if Kyle has access to the studio. As you may have heard, listeners, we have had some issues with Blog Talk Radio trying to get this program started. And I'm not sure if we're actually able to play the clip that I uploaded. I don't know if Kyle can do that. If not, it's not a big deal. It was basically just a short clip of Trump's highlights when, you know, he was announcing his presidential campaign. So anyways, we'll just pretend that we heard that. So
thing I've heard about Trump was uttered by somebody I don't really like that much, but the health ranger, what is his name, Adams, said that Trump is speaking with the same voice that the ordinary people are using and asking the same questions. And that's true to a large extent because he took the words out of a lot of people's mouths when he went down to the border and accurately reported on what was going on. And that's definitely not what we're hearing from the people in Washington. So I think that enabled him to jump into a big lead, and he seems to be widening the gap. And I think
absolutely,
everybody likes that idea because all the other people running are the same empty suits who have been around forever and uttering the same things. But my own personal view is that the whole country got really enthusiastic when Barack Obama was running for president, and they thought they couldn't stand any more of George Bush, which they couldn't. But then Barack Obama turned out to be just like George Bush, only worse. So I'm thinking And as you know, I tend to be very cynical very often. I'm thinking that no matter how enthusiastic we get about Donald Trump, were he to make it all the way to the White House, I think he would just join right in and continuing the same warmongering policies that have been pursued by America for, almost a century now.
Right. Yeah, so I guess, you know, that I pretty much wanted to start off by just asking you what your general thoughts were or are about Donald Trump. I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, I think everybody's heard of Donald Trump. I really didn't pay any attention to him prior to, you know, his announcement that he's, you know, running for president. I mean, I knew he was on The Apprentice. I knew he was a billionaire, you know, real estate guy, you know, big corporate CEO, a corporate titan, made a ton of money. But honestly, I didn't really know much about him. And to be entirely honest, the guy has been nothing but outstanding. I mean, the guy is just a phenom, if you ask me. He's very honest. He comes across as very genuine. He's handled the media well. He has great talking points. I mean, the guy, what's clear to me is that Donald Trump is the one running the show.
Yeah.
Like, he is not – he is – the media is reacting to him rather than him reacting to the media. If the media tries to, and they do this if you watch him in any of these appearances, if you watch him on Meet the Press, Fox News isn't as bad, although the debate was terrible. They really tried to trap him in the debate on a number of occasions. But if you watch him on Meet the Press or CNN, they always want to get into these superficial, you know, really childish issues about, oh, is he, you know, against women? Did he make disparaging remarks about women? You know, did he hurt the feelings of illegal aliens? You know, these sort of sentimental, superficial, really just childish dialogue that we hear, you know, so much. That's really all politics is these days. Donald Trump absolutely turns it around on them. Yeah. Hammers his talking points. You know, he's the one that's really driving the dialogue and reformulating, you know, what the media is saying to advance his own agenda.
He's succeeded in not letting anybody else into the spotlight. Not that there have been any great efforts by anybody else. And the thing I read today by, I forget the fellow's name, but he ran several other presidential campaigns, he was cautioning that Trump needs to set up an operation that will sustain him through the many months before the election, and he doesn't see that as having happened yet. So I don't imagine he'll have any trouble attracting the top people to help him run his campaign, and I don't imagine, given his somewhat freewheeling ways, that he's not going to have any trouble finding enough ammunition to make all these other candidates look pretty silly, which they are.
Exactly.
But the whole thing I have about every election, and especially this election, is that we have a limited number of things that we're allowed to talk about, and Trump may be making a lot of hay with the border issues and several other things, but he isn't really getting into the meat of the crucial issues that will determine America's future. And I think probably the top issue is the Jewish control of American politics. He's not about to go into that. So we're not about to get any real solutions to anything, because that's the number one problem with America, is that it's being run by being run into the ground by a foreign power.
Absolutely. Yeah, very well said. And, you know, that was basically what I was trying to tell him in this open letter, was, hey, look, there are some
I saw that.
Yeah, I mean, there are some very fundamental issues that you've been saying for, a decade now?
Yeah, about
And you know, to me, that you're right. I mean, it is absolutely crucial. There are some fundamental issues that until we are able to deal with these issues as a nation, as adults, as responsible individuals, as responsible citizens, we're never going to get anywhere, right?
That's
mean, and that includes, obviously, the Jewish control of the American media particularly, but also their influence and domination over our political system, the electoral process itself.
they get to pick the candidates.
Yeah, I mean, they pretty much do for the most part. I mean, I think Donald Trump is kind of throwing a wrench in that. But you're generally speaking, I mean, the Jews most certainly control the Democratic and Republican parties. They control electoral politics. We see all these Jewish billionaires that essentially determine the fate of these political candidates. And the Jews openly admit this. I mean, I've written multiple articles discussing this where like the Jewish Daily Forward is talking about all the Jewish billionaires that control the Democrats. And then they have another article talking about all the Jewish billionaires that control the Republicans. I mean, it's the same names over and over and over again. And they're just out in the open saying these things. I think Donald Trump has thrown a major wrench in that. But you're right. I mean, he's not going to bring these issues up. You know, it would be, you know, we'd be foolish to think that Donald Trump is going to talk about Jewish power and influence in America, about 9/11, about, you know, the fake Holocaust story, about, you know, Israeli criminality, et cetera. I mean, he's not going to talk about these issues. And he's certainly not going to talk about any issues from a pro-white, you know, white nationalist type perspective.
No, he
at least thus far, he hasn't.
Donald Trump is going to get along quite well with Israel. He's a good friend of Benjamin Netanyahu, and he thinks Netanyahu is a good leader. And I think the thing to remember about Donald Trump, well, I think he's a Ronald Reagan of his time. He's a very good actor who has mastered the role of a big wig who can run everything. But we have to remember where and how Donald Trump has made his money. And first of all, he started out with a lot of money, and then he kind of lost most of it along the way, but he rebounded through his ownership of casinos. And then he made a lot of real estate deals, and he apparently owns a lot of companies and has a lot of employees. He made a lot of hay about that on his television program, where he set himself up as the quintessential boss. I don't know how true that was, but I think when you take a closer look, and I don't know, I haven't really seen anybody who has taken a closer look. I think Donald Trump is up to his neck with Israeli connections. He's probably up to his neck in organized crime connections, because he's been wheeling and dealing in the big city, and they kind of go together. Mm-hmm. And his reputation of making billions of dollars with casinos, I think, tells us all we need to know about what kind of future he has in store for America, which is not that good. Now, having said that, he's a breath of fresh air amongst these moribund whores who are all positioning themselves to win the hearts of either Sheldon Adelson or George Soros, because it seems to be Adelson is the Republican kingmaker and Soros serves that role for the Democrats. Mm-hmm. And all these other candidates are just hoping to win their favor. And this is a sick situation, because there's nobody on the horizon. You know, we were hoping at one point that maybe Rand Paul might fill this role, but he's shown no sign of doing that.
Where he was just disgraceful in the debate. He was so pathetic and weak.
Awful.
I mean, all of them were, really. Donald Trump absolutely dominated the debate in every single way.
But
go ahead.
We can't forget that it's like a fixed horse race where all of these candidates are essentially the same, including Donald Trump.
I want to know how you think Donald Trump is the same as these other candidates.
In that they all accept the Jewish control of the United States. They all accept the American policy of going around the world blowing up countries as a personal favor for Israel. They all accept the infallibility of the Federal Reserve, which over the past 100 years has bled America dry. He has never, and I'm sure never will, mention that we need to reinvestigate 9/11. that we need to understand the political process that took place to install Common Core in all of the American schools. He's never said anything about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and I'm sure, I'm absolutely certain that Donald Trump is all for the passage of legislation that doesn't have to be revealed for the American people. So my personal feeling is that while he may have struck a couple of early chords that were on the minds of the American people, particularly in regard to our porous border in the Southwest, he's no better than George Bush, and he's no better than Barack Obama, and he will serve the purpose of the Israeli bankers who have run the country for a very long time. That's my opinion of Donald Trump.
Okay, well, I definitely disagree. Because, okay, you're right. Donald Trump and none of the candidates, and I don't think any mainstream politician is going to get up and openly declare that 9/11 was a, you know, quote unquote, inside job, and Jewish criminals and the state of Israel were behind it. You know, he's not going to get up and say that. He's not going to talk about racial, you know, racial reality, you know, the war on white people in America, this systematic displacement of whites in the, in a country that they themselves founded, their ancestors founded. He's not going to talk about those issues. He's certainly not going to talk about the Jewish stranglehold over our country when, you know, we look at the media or government or academia or whatever. He's not going to talk about those issues. But what he is talking about is resonating very, very deeply with millions of very alienated people all across the United States of both political parties. I mean, really the Republicans, but even the independents and, you know, some of these more conservative Democrats are listening to what this guy is saying. And what he's saying is absolutely making sense. He's been very critical from the very beginning of the Iraq war. He said it was going to be a disaster. He said that Iran was going to take over the Middle East. And, you know, I don't really agree with that. But you see, when it comes to foreign policy, he definitely has this very hawkish sort of neocon.
Oh, sure. He's a military tone. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is, you know, unfortunate. But at the same time, it's, I see him using it to his advantage to really kind of placate that crowd, that sort of Fox News, those evil Muslims attacked us on 9/11. He's using these talking points to get those people solidly on his side, which they most certainly are. And, you know, we can be critical of that, knowing what we know about 9/11, knowing, you know, what we know about the fraudulent nature of the global war on terrorism and homeland security, knowing what we know about how these paradigms of public policy were really created, concocted by Jewish neocons and Israeli politicians and military strategists. And of course, they used 9/11 to officially implement these policies that they conjured up in their own minds back in the late 1970s. We know all these things. Donald Trump is not going to talk about them, but he has been very critical of the Iraq war. He's been very critical of the manner in which the federal government in our society in general treats our veterans, who are absolutely, you know, it's disgraceful what's going on with the vets in America. I mean, we expect them to go over and fight all these fraudulent wars, and then they come back over here. They have no jobs. They have no health care. They have very little benefits. And Donald Trump is making a lot of good points when it comes to this issue. And again, it's resonating very deeply with people. He's also very critical of the mass media. He's openly called the mass media very corrupt and dishonest. He's very critical of electoral politics. He's saying, look, I used to be involved in this system. I donated to Democrats. I donated to Republicans. I know how these people work. These people are losers. They're incompetent. They're spineless. They're basically puppets of whoever gives them money. He's openly saying this stuff on national television. When was the last time anybody did that? It's been a long time. I don't know if I've ever seen it in my lifetime. I was around when I was a little kid when Ross Perot was running for president. I don't know if he went that far.
No, he didn't. He didn't go anywhere near that. In fact, you know, I can go back into the 60s. I was in college when JFK got assassinated, so I had some idea of what was happening. And there really hasn't been the kind of candor, with the exception of JFK, about the political process, somebody who was willing to admit how corrupt it is.
Right. And I mean, he really is making some very powerful critiques of the media and political establishment in America. He's making very powerful critiques of our corporate policy, our trade policy, these international trade deals. Now, I don't know. You brought up the TPP and some of these other big trade deals that are, you know, currently being negotiated.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I don't know if he's actually specifically talked about these trade deals.
Well, nobody knows what's in them except the inner circle of Congress.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and not even those. A lot of these Congress members don't even know all the full details. They're given briefings,
right,
you know, by these private corporate actors that are basically meeting behind closed doors and, you know, working out all the details of these trade deals. And by the way, let me just put a plug in for American Free Press, because American Free Press really covers this issue very well. Much better than I've really seen in any other alternative media. So again, that's another good reason to subscribe to the newspaper. We have a couple of reporters that really focus on this and do a good job of covering it. And it is a very important issue. But my point about Donald Trump is that what he's saying, generally speaking, about American trade policy, about our foreign policy, you know, he's basically saying that special interests run the show, that our trade policy is, you know, created and advanced and implemented to satisfy corporate interests. The American worker, the American people, the American nation is not taken into consideration. Our workers are being exploited. Our economy is being exploited. We're shipping all of our jobs overseas to Mexico, to China. We're basically being robbed left and right. And he's openly saying these things.
I meant to mention,
and the guy is—he's right. I mean, he is right about this stuff.
I meant to mention that I bought those two Carto books that you recommended. They're pretty good.
Oh, did you? Good, yeah. They actually are really good. Carto's writings are really good, but even the George Michael book, which is written by, you know, he's pretty. I think it's fair to say he's pretty hostile to a lot of these ideas.
Yeah.
I think he does actually do a pretty objective job in the book. But yeah, it is definitely worth buying and reading. It gives you a really good overview of the history of the right wing in America. And speaking of that, I actually just finished a book. It's a biography called American Führer, George Lincoln Rockwell in the American Nazi Party, written by a guy named Frederick Simonelli. I'm not sure how exactly you pronounce it. Anyways, really interesting book. Gets into all of George Lincoln Rockwell's details, you know, the history of his party, what he was involved with. Very, very interesting story. Very courageous guy. And, you know, again, it's pretty objective, but the author writes from a fundamentally anti-racialist, anti-Rockwell perspective. I mean, he's very, you know, he doesn't sympathize with what Rockwell is trying to say, the facts that Rockwell is bringing to light.
Yeah.
But the book is interesting, nonetheless.
I read another biography of actually it was a biography of Pierce that had a lot of material about Rockwell in it, and the one statement that I remember Rockwell making, it was a prediction of what would happen to the movement, and he said the movement would be eventually become bogged down by defectives. And I see that as having happened to a large extent. There's so many good books. I want to get back to Trump, and now I can't remember what I was going to say about him. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Trump is able to talk about a lot of these phenomena generically, but he doesn't specify who is making the money, who is doing all the dirty work. And again, this is campaign stuff. Candidates become very forthcoming in campaigns and are willing to seemingly reveal a lot more about the process than you think they might. But then after the election, when the power is consolidated, a lot of these things tend to be forgotten. I've just seen too many elections where the rhetoric during the campaign seems to be very incisive, but once somebody is elected, it's surprising how the Council on Foreign Relations fills in all the slots, and all of a sudden the new candidate is very much like the old candidate. And I'm almost certain that not only would it happen to Trump if he were elected, but it would happen to any of the other candidates if they were elected. We're going to be on the verge of war. It seems like we just dropped a big bomb on China the other day that nobody seems to be talking too much about except Jim Stone. And we're making war against Russia. We've got our mercenaries all over the Ukraine being poised to destabilize Russia. And I don't hear Trump talking about any of that. The only thing he's saying about that is we need a strong military. So I don't know. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I know he absolutely is saying we need a strong military, which I kind of like hearing. We need a strong military where, you know, everyone's going to be too afraid to mess with us because we're so strong and great. You know, I like that. I think that's, you know, a very kind of macho, and it's cool hearing a presidential candidate say that. I mean, who says that? Nobody says that. Nobody's bold and courageous anymore.
Nobody can mess with us now because our military budget is more than the combined budget of all the other countries of the world. That's why Putin has been so laid back. He even came out and said he can't challenge the U.S. The U.S. is way too strong. And instead of using that power responsibly, we're not using it responsibly. We're following the orders of the Jews, which are to destroy the whole world so the Jews can inflict their peace on the whole world. And their peace is going to be a prison camp.
That's right. That's certainly what the American military has been used for. I mean, really going back to World War I and maybe even before. But definitely with this whole global war on terrorism. I mean, we are essentially the American military. Essentially is the private army of the organized international Jewish community. When you really take a big picture, perspective of what's going on as far as our military is concerned and foreign policy.
Now it's being used inside the country, and Trump is definitely not talking about that.
Well, I wanted to mention Trump has said on a number of occasions, I don't think in the debate, but on numerous media appearances, Trump has said that he thinks he would get along great with Vladimir Putin. He wants to stop meddling in the Ukraine situation. He wants Germany and some of these other European countries to play a more direct role because it is right in their backyard. You know, we're thousands of miles away. It's really kind of, you know, out of our sphere of influence, so to speak. So he has said those things, which I think are good. He hasn't really been the warmongering type against Putin that all the other GOP and Hillary Clinton, you know, the GOP candidates are just, you know, they hate Putin and Russia. Clinton is basically the same way. But Trump sounds much more statesmanlike. He sounds much more professional and respectable when it comes to Putin and China, for that matter. I mean, he's been just absolutely trashing our trade deals with China, saying that, you know, they're getting all this money, they're taking all of our technology, they're taking all of our manufacturing capabilities and, you know, all our factories and whatnot, and we still owe them trillions of dollars. You know, he's openly saying these things and just talking about how ridiculous the whole situation is, saying that he will rectify all of this because he is, you know, he wrote the art of the deal. He is a world-class businessman, as he likes to say. He works with the top business leaders all over the world, and he assures the American people that he will straighten all this out if only he's given a chance. And, you know, I don't know if he really would, but I'd rather give him a chance to do it rather than a guy like Jeb Bush or any of these other clowns.
Yeah, well, I think the one positive I see about Trump is he does see everything as a business opportunity, and that would be a refreshing change because that's not what Obama or Bush have shown that they see. They see everything as kind of a military challenge. But I'm just so distraught and embarrassed and ashamed of the way America has gone around the world killing people at the behest of Israel, And Trump is not going to change that.
Yeah.
Not a bit.
I'm sorry. One second. I'm trying to send an email really quick. Since we don't have access to the studio, I'm trying to – I just sent Kyle an email with a video link. And I'm actually doing I have to use Skype on my phone as well, so I can't – anyways, it just kind of complicates things. Okay. There's a few other things about Trump I wanted to bring up. I have been watching a lot of his appearances, you know, like I said, on Meet the Press and Fox News and all these other, you know, mainstream cable news shows.
Yeah.
And one thing that's just struck me, I mean, you know, I've obviously realized this for a while now, but it's just so clear just how the presidential race and, you know, American politics and our elections in general, they're basically like reality TV shows. They're so, in so many ways, they're so superficial. They very rarely talk about anything of substance. And if you watch Donald Trump, these media people, these very hostile media people, will bring up these ridiculous issues. You know, is he offending Megyn Kelly? Is he offending illegal aliens?
He dismisses them quickly. He's very sensitive.
Well, he does. That's what I mean. I mean, he handles this very well.
He does.
He handles all this very hostile media very well. And I think that is another thing that's resonating deeply with people.
Yes.
Is that we have a guy here who's very bold, courageous, and he is absolutely not backing down. He was on Chuck Todd's Meet the Press, this past Sunday. I think it was either a week or two before. And the whole time he's on there with Chuck Todd is doing nothing but trying to force Donald Trump to apologize to Megyn Kelly and, you know, to all these other people that he's allegedly offended. It's so weak. It's so pathetic. Yeah. And Donald Trump is absolutely having none of it.
Yeah.
He is saying, hell no, I'm not going to apologize. I speak my mind and I stand by what I say. And what I say is right. If I'm wrong about something, sure, I'll apologize. But I'm not wrong about anything. That's basically what he said.
Yeah.
And
true.
When was the last time you saw anybody in American politics say anything close to that?
Oh, everybody's so politically correct. It's embarrassing and stupid. And he isn't really.
And that was his response in the debate, political correctness is killing us.
That is refreshing, and I'm saying, but that's an illusion because he's kind of like maybe has the personality of a Mussolini, where he is able to dismiss all his opponents and ridicule them and kind of put them down and just kind of stampede right past them. But that doesn't really that shows no indication of how he would actually behave as a president. Because right now, we've had a history of presidents who have gone around the world and told absolute lies about what they were doing in order to blow up all these countries and steal their resources. And Trump would be the same way. I'm certain of it.
So now when you say Trump would be the same way, you're saying that Trump would be the same way as far as
Obama stole something like $36 billion in gold from Gaddafi. He had no excuse to do that. He made up out of whole cloth that somehow Gaddafi was being bad to his own people, which exactly the opposite was true, and went in and stole everything the Libyan people had, created a failed state, allowed Israel to put a base in Libya, and is responsible for these thousands of refugees that are coming across the Mediterranean Sea and invading all these Mediterranean countries and destabilizing the whole south of Europe. And Obama had absolutely no justification for doing that. Now, I could see Trump doing the same thing somewhere else just because he could do it. So
it's a very real possibility. One thing that Trump is always talking about is he wants to do what's right for the country.
Yeah.
He only wants to, you know, implement policies that are going to benefit the American people, the American worker, and you know, overall our country. And you know, when it comes to war and peace, I mean, if he sees, you know, all these Jews are, you know, warmongering, which they always do, and he looks at this situation and says, you know, hey, this isn't going to benefit us. We have no business doing this, you know, getting involved in a war like this. You know, who knows? I mean, that's really out of our hands at this point.
I think
everything he's saying is I think, in my view, I think the best thing, the best way to respond to Trump or handle this, as far as, you know, people like us in the alternative media are concerned, is there's, to me, there's really no point in sitting around and bashing Trump and saying he's a Jew and a Jew tool, really, because there isn't a lot of proof of that, right, despite his, you know, his daughter's connections, you know, his daughter's marriage to a Jewish guy.
Yeah.
You know, we should be trying to influence him in our direction as much as we can. I don't know if that's really possible, but at least be bringing up some of these important issues that he is leaving out of, the discourse.
Here's an interesting thought. Trump is clearly the choice of the American people at this point in the campaign. It's still a pretty long distance to the election, but it's pretty clear that Trump has captured the imagination of the American people. And if the election were to be held today, it would seem like he would win easily.
Mm-hmm.
Compare this to 4 or 8 years ago, when Ron Paul was clearly the choice of the American people. He stirred up people. He had people out in the street with Ron Paul signs all over the country. And yet, Ron Paul was demolished by the media. He was immediately marginalized and was almost never heard from again, except on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And he was an also-ran. Now, Trump does not have this negative press that torpedoed the Ron Paul candidacy. And I submit it is because Trump, for all his apparently iconoclastic rhetoric, is really an insider and has the support of the big money people, even though they may be hanging back in the background at this point. Sorry.
Now, I just don't really see. I don't know if there's really a lot of evidence to support that, though. That he, I mean, yeah, he's connected to all these elites. I mean, he is himself a major part of the elite. But as far as, for example, I just posted this article just the other day, and it's titled "Rabbi Dove Zakheim." For some reason, we're still listening to this guy. Rabbi Dove Zakheim, you know, is openly saying Trump is unelectable. He's not a serious candidate. And this is coming from Haaretz, a major Israeli newspaper.
Uh-huh.
And he basically says that, you know, despite Trump's commanding lead in a number of presidential polls, and he is, you know, as you said, he's leading in all these polls.
Yeah.
He crushed in the debate. He dominated the debate.
Yeah.
He's crushing the media. You know, he has all this media attention. Every time he goes on a show, they're getting 20, 30, 40 million viewers. You know, he is really –
yep.
Dominating the whole presidential campaign in general. But anyways, this article talks about how, you know, the mainstream Jewish political establishment, the Republicans specifically, you know, they think that Donald Trump is kind of like one of these lowbrow candidates where, you know, a lot of the things that he's bringing up are going to resonate with your sort of Tea Party, you know, alienated, pissed off Americans. But, you know, they don't see him being a serious candidate. He's unelectable. They even talk about how – here's a direct quote. Even though Donald Trump is self-financing his campaign and not soliciting contributions, he likely would not find them among wealthy Republican Jews, even if there were any. You know, the article is basically saying that all of these big-time you know, Jewish political campaign donors, they're all backing Jeb Bush and Rubio and some of these other, you know, cuck-servative type candidates. That's another thing I wanted to get your take on, is this whole cuck-servative. We'll get to that in a few minutes.
That's a great well, yeah.
And another thing that this article – let me just mention this briefly. Another thing this article brought to light was that they reviewed his foundation, the Donald J. Trump Foundation. They reviewed the tax documents from 2013.
Uh-huh.
And none of it, none of his money, none of the donations he sent out went to any Jewish organization.
I see that.
And, you know, one of the points that I made in the article, it's obviously very, you know, conjectural, is, you know, we've seen Donald Trump give these speeches endorsing Netanyahu, for example, praising Israel, yeah, praising the Jewish state, saying he would be the best candidate for Israel. And I said here, you know, perhaps he's doing these things in a sort of superficial manner in order to maintain existing business familial and political relations. You know, he's kind of staying inside of that controlled, you know, we love the Jews, we love Israel paradigm that both political parties operate under in America. I don't know that. That's probably more wishful thinking on my part than actual reality. But who knows? I mean, maybe Donald Trump is brilliant. He's very shrewd. He knows what he's doing. And to me, he does not come across as anyone's puppet. You know, he's the one that's calling the shots. He's deciding what he wants to say. He's not, you know, if you watch the debate, like Rubio, Rand Paul, especially Jeb Bush, these guys were reading lines.
Losers, yeah.
I mean, they were total freaking losers. Yeah. Donald Trump was very genuine. He's very accessible. He's all over Twitter calling people out. The guy is awesome. I mean, I don't care what anybody said. The guy's awesome.
Point A.
You know, I'm not saying he's like the savior or anything, but this guy is really making some serious moves in this campaign here, and he's bringing up a lot of very important, very critical issues that are key to the future of America.
Point A. Rabbi Dov Zakheim is not a serious commentator.
Yes, yeah,
he's,
true.
He's a wanted criminal. Responsible for stealing $8 million from the Pentagon and engineering the remote control systems on 9/11. And then he escaped from the country, so they couldn't question him and hid out in Israel all this time until he returned as Mitt Romney's chief campaign advisor. So Dov Zakheim is just another Jewish fool who really shouldn't be meddling in American elections, although I'm sure it will be.
Well, what do you make of this idea that, you know, the mainstream political establishment, not just the Jews, but the mainstream political establishment, the media, they've been saying, you know, since the beginning that Donald Trump is not serious. He's basically a clown. He doesn't know what he's talking about.
Think
he's
of the
serious.
Other candidates. Think of,
but he's the opposite. He's the only one that is serious.
That's right. Think of Huckabee. Think of Sam Forum. These guys are complete fools. Think of Lindsey Graham.
Wow, that guy is,
these people
is terrible.
These people are dime store mannequins, for God's sakes.
Yes.
You know, so Trump is really, Trump is really, although you could say it about Bernie Sanders too, because he's very serious. Trump is really the only serious candidate. Jeb Bush represents himself as a serious candidate, but when he says his brother is his chief foreign policy advisor, how seriously can you take him?
Right. Well, I mean, that's clear. Everybody listening to this radio program, you know, knows full well that the entire gaggle of GOP candidates, save Donald Trump, perhaps, are nothing but puppets. I mean, these guys are just it's embarrassing. Like, I'm embarrassed for these
guys.
Well,
it's, you know, I've seen a lot of elections at this point, and it's always been embarrassing. We used to think, and I guess we don't think this way anymore, but we used to think America was a really smart country. It's like for the longest time, the rest of the world really admired America because we invented all these things and had all this luxury, and we thought America was a really smart place. But when you think about the presidents that we've had over the years, it's like the same rule applies to presidents that they apply to cops in the United States, where you can't have an IQ that's too high or you're kind of ineligible for election. And I guess the one exception to that would have been Clinton, who supposedly had a very high IQ. But the way he's lived his life, I'm not sure it really shows.
Right.
So,
well, and see, yeah, that's you're totally right. What they rely on is these just mindless puppets that will just literally do anything with their controllers, with their donors, what the media
and
tell them to. They're spineless. They won't stand up and really
even
say what's on their mind, except for Trump.
Here's an even more important point than that. The United States, the people in the United States have been dumbed down by terrible television, bad educational system, bad food, and other influences. And the people who make political opinions rely on the opinions of dumbed down Americans to form their consensus. And They don't want intelligent explanations of any issues. They just want catchy buzzwords that will catch the attention of the people who are really not paying that much attention and yet think they know what's going on. It's like some of my relatives read the paper once a week and think they're political experts. It's like the United States relies on the dumbed down, middle of the road people to direct their foreign policy, their domestic policy. It's like the people who govern us are relying on people who can't make informed decisions to make the decisions for the country, because that way they can hoodwink the rest of the country.
Mm-hmm. Well, and see, I think it's to me, the more and more I think about these things, the more and more clear it becomes. And I mean, Hitler writes about this in Mein Kampf, and you know, others have written about it. You know, the American founding fathers wrote about similar subjects, and you know, along these same lines, is that the vast majority of people really are not even capable of independent critical thought. I mean, they're not going to go out and you know, critically investigate things. They're going to consume the information that is presented to them and base it more or less, accept it. And that's the situation we find ourselves in. And that is why the Jewish media is so powerful and so subversive, corrupt, and really evil, because that the Jewish media is what sets the agenda. They frame how people perceive the world, how they perceive certain issues. You know, they frame people's talking points about politics, about sex, about relationships, about the very country we live in, about everything.
And
I
as
mean,
you
most
look,
people,
as you look across the whole spectrum of media that is put out, that has many different opinions about the Illuminati and whatever the Catholic groups are that are. I'm drawing a blank on them.
The Jesuits.
The Jesuits.
The infamous Jesuits.
Knights of Malta. The Black Pope. All across the spectrum of media, the one thing you don't really hear. You don't hear it on Counterpunch. You don't hear it on Information Clearinghouse. You don't hear it much on Rentsel, or you do hear it a little. You never hear it on Alex Jones. All of the big media, all of the big mainstream media, the subject never comes up is Jewish control of the United States. And that's because the Jews control all the media. And until we forthrightly address that, we're going to be either slaves or dead. Those are our two choices.
Absolutely. Now, I really want to ask you about this whole cuckservative meme. And it was actually a topic that I didn't even have planned. I made a little outline here. And
it's
It's
a great label.
Isn't it? Yeah, I've just been loving this.
Lindsey Graham, John McCain, all of these artificial people who are just totally sucking up to the Jews. Newt Gingrich was probably the quintessential cuckservative, because he was really a liberal Rockefeller Democrat who set himself up as a conservative spokesman and became Speaker of the House and made lots of money from honoraria and almost became president at one point. And he passed himself off as a conservative, but he wasn't. He was a Rockefeller Democrat.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, this the whole cuckservative thing has been really interesting to watch and follow. And you know, to be honest, I'm not on Twitter and some of these other sites, you know, engaging in comments or, you know, trolling other people or anything. Like I don't do any of that stuff. I'm not very good good at doing stuff like that. I just like to sit back and read it and watch it and laugh about it, because it is pretty funny.
Yeah.
And I think it's what's so great about it and so powerful about it is it just demonstrates a fundamental reality that we have all of these, you know, these people that portray themselves as, you know, patriotic Americans. They're conservatives, they're gun owners, they stand up for traditional America.
The
Bushes, you know, all these GOP candidates. The very people who make up that demographic, that political demographic, white America, they are openly hostile towards.
Yeah.
That's the most amazing thing is, and they're not only openly hostile towards, you know, white people, white America, traditional white America, they're doing everything in their power to advance Jewish interests.
That's right.
It's really incredible. And I mean, it's something that we've obviously noticed for a long time, but the way it's been packaged and presented in this cuckservative meme and, you know, how it's sort of just, you know, grown from this has just been very powerful in my view.
I think in retrospect, the most valuable thing that Trump has done so far is to blunt the appearance of another Bush in the candidate lineup, because mm-hmm. Trump has been so loud and such a slapstick kind of candidate at this point that Bush has not had a chance to even enter the conversation. And I thank Donald Trump for that, because I hope Bush never gains any ground.
Right. You know, and that's I did a show with Scott Roberts a few weeks ago about Donald Trump. Scott Roberts put out a video called Donald Trumpstein, where he went through. It is an interesting video. I'd encourage everybody to watch it. I believe I posted it on my site, and I know I've linked to it a number of times in recent articles I've written. But you know, he did this show talking about Donald Trump's Jewish connections and showing, like, you know, videos of Donald Trump openly saying he loves Jews and loves Israel and whatnot. But when I was on his show, we talked about Trump and the election and whatnot. And I think one of the most important points about Donald Trump, what he's doing, is he is just demonstrating how big of, you know, conservatives these GOP people are.
Yeah, that's
true. I mean, they're such cowards. They're such crybabies.
Yeah.
It's just pathetic. It's so pathetic.
It really is a terrible lineup. It's too bad Michelle Bachmann isn't in it this year. She would fit right in there.
Oh, God, I know. So anyways, yeah, the whole cuckservative thing has been very interesting to follow. There have been a lot of really good articles written about it, a lot of good podcasts done about it. And
you know, it's really amazing how many people voted for George Bush to begin with, because they were all cuckservatives. And how many people even today are considering one or the other of the Republican candidates and having convinced themselves that these guys are rock solid Americans who are really interested in preserving the American way, when they're all criminals owned by the Jews, ready to do anything that the Jews tell them to do. I mean, we saw what happened when Netanyahu came to Congress. All of those people who were up there clapping enthusiastically, who weren't liberals, were cuckservatives.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and see, that's sort of my point, is that the Trump candidacy, how he's acting, how he's handling the media, his responses to some of these questions that are thrown at him, just the manner in which he carries himself and presents himself. There's a very sharp contrast between Donald Trump and any other GOP candidate. It's like, look, we got a real man here, a real, like, bold, you know, the epitome of like an alpha male versus these cowardly beta males, these cuckservatives. I mean, even the word itself is like perfectly accurate for these people.
I like it. And it's like, you could call Trump a breath of fresh air, but I think we're going to find out that the air is not really fresh.
Well, we will definitely have to see about that. Who knows? I know he said repeatedly that, you know, he's running as the GOP candidate. He wants to win the nomination. He's not ruling out a third party candidacy if the GOP, you know, basically excludes him from the process. And that would really be the only way that he would not get the nomination, from what I can tell. I mean, everybody loves this guy.
Yeah, I think if he wins, he'll have a career like Reagan. And he reminds me of Reagan in a lot of ways. But I hope he doesn't befall, if he does get elected, I hope he doesn't befall the same fate as Reagan, where they put an assassin like George Bush in as his vice president, who tried and failed to kill him, but who had also killed another president. And so they might use Trump to get the votes and then put in a vice president who they'll elevate to the number one position. I'd hate to see that happen to him. But I think, you know, history has a way of repeating itself, and that could happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it will be interesting to see who he, who Trump decides to, you know, team up with. You know, if he, assuming he does get the nomination, or if he runs third party.
Well, Ben Carson has already been sucking up to him a little bit. But I think I told when we were talking the other day about Ben Carson, he supposedly is this non-politician,
right?
Heroic neurosurgeon. And he came out and said the other day that he was for mandatory vaccinations, and it made me wonder what kind of a doctor he really was.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me, yeah. Well, there's two final issues related to Donald Trump that I want to talk about. The first one, I we've kind of talked about this, but I'm just curious, your opinion.
Sure.
How do you think Donald Trump has been handling the very hostile media? I mean, you know, most of these television shows he's going on are, you know, they're asking very hostile questions. They're trying to stump the Trump. You know, they're trying to get him in a situation
He's been great, but he's been handling media. He's been handling media like that for decades. He's been defending himself for decades against all of these people who say, "How can you do what you're doing?" And all Trump says is, "This is what I do."
Right.
No, he's not going to have.
Okay, so you think he is handling the media well?
He's not going to have any trouble the rest of the way with the media.
Okay. And his platform in general,
I don't know what it is.
Well, I mean, it's basically the points that I listed off. You know, the main points that he's bringing up as far as our trade deals are concerned, our immigration policy is out of control. In fact, he just released a pretty detailed immigration reform plan.
Yeah,
where he's talking about building. I mean, he's been saying he's going to build a wall and make Mexico pay for it. He wants to deport all the illegal aliens out of the country, basically stop immigration, you know, force American companies and corporations to hire American workers. His immigration proposal is rock solid, in my view. I mean, he's not openly saying, look, we need to maintain a white America or anything like that. But, you know, it's a lot better than anything you'll get from the other GOP candidates. And I think that there's a lot to be admired in what he's done as far as the immigration proposal is concerned.
I agree.
Did you read it?
Yes, I did. It's a very realistic thing, and it's what we've been hoping a politician would say about immigration, because it needs to be slowed down, if not stopped. It is totally overloaded the American system, the American physical plant, to where ordinary Americans can't get medical care because the emergency rooms are all filled up with illegal aliens who have been given. This is a subject for a whole other show. What Obama has done to America, he's turned it over to the aliens. He's elevated the minorities. This is a situation where minorities rule, and the white majority is being terrorized by all of these rules, and their lives are being sabotaged by the first and, we hope, the last black president America ever has.
That's right. And, you know, I think Donald Trump could easily bring up some of these points without being necessarily openly racial. You know what I mean? I mean, because it's very clear what's going on in America. I mean, there is an absolute agenda to fundamentally transform this country, to displace the ethnic group that founded this country.
It's all over the world. It's all over Europe. Europe is shambles at this point.
It's true.
I was talking to somebody in Poland. Poland is a mess. They have strife everywhere in Poland. And, of course, we've heard about Sweden, and we heard about France and the no-go zones. My friend in Ireland is just at his wit's end, where all the jobs are being taken up by these African immigrants. And, of course, in England, we have these rape gangs running around and being defended by the British government. I was reading a police report in Britain the other day, and these guys get 3 years in jail for raping 12-year-old girls. What the hell is that all about?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I've been following it. The whole situation is infuriating. And it's, you know, I guess it just shows how, you know, for lack of a better term, just how weak Europe has become. I mean, these people are invading their country. They're raping children.
The Jews own everything.
And these guys, officers.
The Jews own
Well, I mean, these police officers are literally more afraid of being called a racist than stopping, you know, their own children from being raped by these third world aliens.
That's right. We have the Jews to thank for that.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Well, John, I wanted to play a clip, and I think Kyle has it. And I think he can play it for us. I just posted this on my website the other day. It is called here. I just had it open, and now I don't.
It's called
"Do You Believe in Our Jewish Future?"
Oh boy!
And it's an interesting video. We'll talk about it after we hear it.
Okay.
The video is up on therealistreport.com right now. And it's really pretty incredible. So Kyle, if you could go ahead and play it, it's about 2 minutes, and I believe this comes from the Jewish United Fund. I believe that's the name of the YouTube channel that I found this on. So Kyle, if you could play that real quick, we will be back in about 2 minutes.
I have lost faith in my ability to make a difference. I believe the challenges before us are too great. I will stop thinking it matters if Israel is a safe haven for Jews worldwide. Future generations will understand we can't win the fight against anti-Semitism and hate. Who says Jews are all responsible for one another? This is just not true. Young Jews don't care about Jewish identity and learning. People say this generation always puts themselves first. We cannot assume it's important to everyone to care for people in need. It is clear Jewish life and community will fade in the next generation. It is ridiculous to believe there is hope for the future. But if we can harness the power of collective giving, together we can reverse all of this. There is hope for the future. It is ridiculous to believe
Jewish life and community will fade in the next generation. It is clear it's important to everyone to care for people in need. We cannot assume this generation
always puts themselves first. People say young Jews don't care about Jewish identity and learning. This is just not true. Jews are all responsible for one another.
Who says we can't win the fight against anti-Semitism and hate? Future generations will understand it matters if Israel is a safe haven for Jews worldwide.
I will stop thinking the challenges before us are too great.
I believe in the power of community.
I'm not sure how well you were able to hear everything that was said in that video. And the listeners as well. I'd encourage everybody to go check it out. It's right up on my website right now. If you go to therealistreport.com, you should see it's the latest post.
I'm on it, but I don't see it.
It should be right at the top. I mean, it's like a 2-minute YouTube video. But my question to you was going to be, you know, why can't white people make videos like this? Why can't white people think in racial collective terms like the Jews are so able, you know, are so effectively able to do?
You've got Chateau Hartis as a link on here. That's a great site.
Yeah, it is.
You know, that's a good question. One of the things I wanted to talk to you about was the observation that I made to you the other day that all of these minorities don't have the same outlook as the whites do. It's like the whites are the only people or the only ethnic or racial group that actually cares about what happens to America. All of these other groups are only interested in getting their share of the pie without really working for it. They think like children, where the white people are supposed to support them because they've been downtrodden for so long. It's this attitude of entitlement that the Jews have that they've communicated to all these other groups. And it's like the blacks who confronted Hillary Clinton the other day were a perfect example of that, where they like walk up to white people and say, you have to give us a share of what you've earned, without realizing that the only way you can get along in the world is to make your own way and earn your own keep. And it's like it's impossible to tell most black people that. They are offended by that. They have been convinced by the Jews that they think they've been abused for so long that they should get everything for nothing now. And this is really what the white people of America have to gather themselves behind to set an example to everybody else that we're going to have to stick together to fight off this mongrelization of America, because if we don't, we're going to all wind up exterminated.
Yes, that's very true. And see, this was what the whole Jewish, communist, Marxist civil rights struggle and racial integration, this is what this was all about. This whole agenda was about.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, not only displacing America, but really eroding and demonizing and pathologizing any sort of white racial identity, you know, instilling this false idea that these blacks and other minorities have been historically oppressed and mistreated and abused by white supremacists. You know, this very anti-white historical narrative, which is ongoing. I mean, you read any leftist publication today and you see, you know, this sort of mindset.
Yeah.
In every sentence that's spewed on the webpage or whatever you're reading, I mean, these people hate white people. They blame white people, specifically white, straight heterosexual white males, specifically, for everything.
And it's like,
and this idea has just been pounded into their minds by the Jews primarily.
Yeah, white people have given them everything they have.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. I mean, we can't give these people enough. Like, we're giving them welfare. We're giving them, you know, affirmative action. And Donald Trump actually just said the other day that he is okay with affirmative action. I was very disappointed to hear that.
Yeah.
But anyways, I guess I should have expected that one. But yeah, I mean, it's like we can't give these people enough. We give that, you know, we come up with these ridiculous excuses as to why black people continually fail. You know, it's, oh, their neighborhood is bad, or, you know, they come from a broken family, or there's not enough money in the schools, or the teachers are terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
It's always an excuse.
Yeah.
And you see this with all of these minority groups, basically. It's and, you know, talking to you the other day and then, you know, just really reflecting on these things, it's come – it just, I guess, sort of reinstills in my mind the central importance of race – and virtually any phenomenon we're observing in the world, whether it's political, cultural, economic, certainly social, anything. I mean, it all goes back to race. And if you discount race or think it doesn't matter, or you have this idea that race is a social construct, the world doesn't make sense at all. I mean, you can't make sense of the world without factoring in the central importance of race in everything.
Yes, I agree with that. Yeah. Yep, it's and it's too bad that that principle of racial solidarity is now not politically correct. It's been destroyed by the Jews. It has convinced so many white people that it's not important. Where you have you know, white people going to fight for ISIS and adopting the Democratic policies of, what was that plan Obama came out with, where he was going to evict certain white people from their homes and white enclaves and insert blacks into these communities?
He had some, I think it was a HUD program, housing and urban development. Yeah,
I haven't heard too much about that lately, but the news has kind of been overtaken. We have pockets of Somalis throughout the country. There's a big pocket of them in Minnesota, and there is uncharacteristically a pocket of them in Lewiston, Maine, where thousands of Somalis have been put down in Lewiston, Maine, so many that they're having to hire Somalis for the police force because the Somali crime is, like, devastating the town. But perhaps it's nowhere worse than in Sweden, where Sweden has just been destroyed by this Barbara Spector multiculturalism, and it's like, it seems like it's too late to stop it. It seems like the world is going to be wrenched into a complete uproar I guess Belgium has tried to stop it or try to reverse it, but once you've got tens of thousands of African and Middle Eastern refugees in your country, it's pretty tough to reverse that. And the only thing that will follow is a race war, and that, of course, is what they want. They want a race war, because a race war gives them an opportunity to send the police into every town and crack down on everybody.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they want.
Well, I think we need to be very clear about the fact that white people, you know, do exist. We are a unique racial and ethnic group, and we deserve our own territory. We deserve our own political institutions. We deserve our own educational institutions and economies. I mean, we deserve a government that exists to advance the well-being of our race, which is exactly what National Socialist Germany was all about. And this idea, to me, is so fundamentally just and honorable and righteous that, you know, it's just a matter of time before it becomes more and more accepted. I mean, it's because it is. That's the way the world should be operating. You know what I mean? And, you know, I think more and more people are coming to realize that, you know, the central importance of race and the fact that there's very clearly an agenda to destroy white countries and white people specifically. And it's unacceptable. I mean, it's definitely I will not go for this anymore. And there's more and more people joining our ranks every single day.
I think should be never really makes it in the real world. And as you were saying that, I was agreeing with it, but I was wondering about the millions of half-caste children who have white mothers and absent black fathers who are all over this country. Which way will they turn when they're forced to make a choice of
right
which side to be on?
It's a very sticky situation. Yeah. I mean, as you know, and as I'm sure most people listening, I myself have a daughter who's mixed racial heritage. And, you know, I don't know. I really don't know a good answer to that. I mean, the only thing I can really think of is, you know, basically modeling, you know, a future, you know, white homeland, white state off of what National Socialist Germany did. And that was basically exclude certain individuals from being able to have any sort of citizenship, and that obviously included Jews, but it also included other non-Germans and even some mixed race people. But you know, I don't know. I mean, I really don't know. We're not even close to being able to address that sort of question. We got to get some basics figured out here first.
Yeah, that's right. But
yeah, I mean, it is a problem, and you know, I think that anytime, I mean, if you look all throughout history, anytime you see multiculturalism, you see port cities, for example, or multicultural empires, you see racial mixing. It's just sort of inevitable. And I think it's very destructive. I think it's destructive to both racial groups.
Destroy the Roman Empire.
Yeah, I mean, there's you know, very learned scholars who have written entire books about this subject, and in fact, that Adolf Hitler, that was one of his central points, and this was very, you know, sort of accepted at the time. I mean, most anthropologists and historians understood that this was the key to history, was, you know, racial purity, and maintain, in order to maintain a civilization, you had to maintain the racial stock that founded that civilization. And if you look all throughout history, the only people that have been able to create, build, and maintain a civilization that we think of today have been white people. I mean, period. That's just a fact of life. And I don't say that to be rude or condescending to non-whites, but that's just the reality of the situation, and there's nothing wrong with saying that fact. In fact, by denying that, I think it's, you know, hurting everybody. It's certainly hurting, you know, the non-white races who think that, you know, they haven't advanced to the level that we have simply because we're oppressing them, when nothing could be further from the truth.
Well, I think the Japanese have managed that, but they have a unique geographical situation.
Right.
And I probably the Chinese would argue for the same thing.
Well, I think it shows you that if you have a nation or a country with a very strong ethnic identity, you know, they're very proud of who they are. They want to do what's best for their people, for their family, for their community, for their neighborhood, for their city, whatever. You know, that leads to success. That leads to a productive environment for everybody. And see, we've basically lost that in America. I mean, you can still find that, you know, I mean, I see, yeah, it's becoming more and more difficult, but I mean, you still can't see that in America today. It's becoming more and more convoluted and jumbled up and just totally out of control. But, you know, this is actually something I wanted to bring up with you, because I think if you look at – I'm really interested in identity, and I've always been very interested in identity. You know, what makes – you know, what defines a person? What defines a people, a group of people? You know, who are we? How do we define ourselves, you know, in relation to others? And I think if you look at America, we – you know, American identity is very layered. You know, there's this sort of overarching American identity. But then if you go all across the country, there's all these regional identities. There's these, you know, sort of local identities, even like neighborhood identities. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You see this with like gangs. And I mean, not only gangs, but just, you know, all sorts of, you know, you see this manifest in all sorts of ways all across the country. But yes. I don't think it's really been properly discussed and talked about, certainly from a pro-white American perspective. And I'm just curious what your take is on that. Like, what does it mean to be an American to you?
I was thinking of the Polish community in Chicago. It was very much self-identifying. But what it means to be an American today is not what I used to feel about being an American, say, when I was in high school or college. When I was very sure that I was an American, now I'm not so sure. I know way too much about American history to be sure to decide if I really want to be an American, because America has really turned into a terrifying, terrible entity, going around the world, killing people and taking their stuff. Because I was born here and I'll probably die here. But I have nothing, I have nothing but contempt for the American government, which has sold out the American people at the beginning of the 20th century when the Jews came over and created the income tax and created the Federal Reserve. We were sold out by our leaders, and there, I mean, we can count the leaders on one hand who tried to protest that since then. There was McFadden in the 30s. There was Lindbergh in the 40s. There was McCarthy in the 50s. Maybe there was Kennedy in the 60s. But there just weren't too many who would resist the lure of billions of dollars to keep their mouths shut and let the Jews do what they want. And as a result, we've had the so-called liberation of women, which pretty much destroyed the American home. And then we had the Jewish psychiatrist saying that homosexuals were just an alternative lifestyle, which has pretty much wrecked the whole culture and really destroyed any remnant of decency that used to be really the hallmark of American society. At least within the United States, it was decency and politeness and kindness to your neighbors that used to be the American hallmark when they had granges all across the country and neighbors took care of each other. The opening up of immigration in the 60s, thanks to Lyndon Johnson and his Jewish friends, have totally destroyed that now, where everybody's afraid of their neighbors. And we have nothing but total chaos everywhere. And now we have even worse. We never thought this would have happened when I was growing up, that the American government would be creating all these programs to kill their own citizens, these cell towers that emit radiations, the deliberate insertion of poisons into medicines to make people even sicker. You know, it's totally out of control now. And I guess we can't expect any of our presidential candidates to talk about this, because that would that would like disqualify them from the election, because the American people just couldn't handle the truth at this point. And I think that's the situation we're in. We're never going to solve any of these problems, because if we ever were able to convince the American people of what has really gone on. They die of apoplexy right on the spot.
Yeah, I know it took me a good year or two before I was finally, comfortable with this information. And when I say comfortable, I mean just like psychologically, mature enough and you know, capable to deal with it. And okay, like I understand all this stuff is true. This is how the world really works. And we've been lied to about all these issues. Now I can finally compose myself and do what I can to change it.
That
takes time.
The highest, most respected people in the world are guilty of cutting up babies and eating them. This is the level to which human civilization has devolved.
Now, are you referring to the...
I'm talking Prince Charles's friends.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear about this.
I'm talking about what's that thing they have in California with the big owl?
Oh, Bohemian Grove.
Yeah, that type of... I'm talking about the Kay Griggs material. I'm talking about the 300,000 children who go missing every year and are sold to foreign rich people to do with as they may. Who was that guy in Belgium who used to go around cutting up children while the royals of... And that's like the quintessential... You know, you hear these stories about the Bush family and Cheney and all of these Boys Town in Nebraska and all these murders that are going on. When you think of the highest, most powerful people in the country, they're like the worst criminals. So who do we aspire to be? And how can you blame people for wanting to head off into the wilderness? Just like the old Chinese poet Chuang Tzu said, don't get involved with the political realm. You'll be forever disappointed. Get away from humanity, because it's just, it's always been this dirty and this crazy. But we don't have that. We don't have that. We don't have that luxury. We, you and me, and the other people we know, have decided to like blow the whistle on as much of this as we can. And it's very frustrating not to get a better response from people who are more interested in stock car racing or taking drugs or whatever it is they do that gets them off. So we just have to wander on our lonely way trying to get recruits here and there to share our horror and try to create, efforts to restore whatever sense of humanity we can in as many people as we can. And fortunately for me, I have a list of people who care about what I write about and who care about what happens to the rest of the world. And that energizes me to know that there are people out there who really care, who can deal with this horror, are all trying their best. Go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah. And see, that's the thing. I mean, there are lots of people that do read the articles and do listen to the shows and do care about all of this stuff. And, you know, I think in my own personal experience, my own personal life, I think the most effective thing to do or to conduct yourself, I guess, is just to really – and I had a problem with this when I first was kind of waking up to this information – is to, really just conduct yourself – be – lead by example, basically. Right. Be the type of person that you expect in other people, you know. Whatever you can. Like I literally like wake up. I think about this stuff like all the time. I mean, this is like really what kind of drives me in my life. You know, it's just so central to everything I do. You know, I'm always thinking about what can I do to advance this cause, and even in a little way. I really always try to be productive and make the most use of my time. Just conduct myself with honor and integrity, and that's really what we all should be striving to do, in my opinion.
The line I used to
use, be the best representative of this information, of this cause, of this movement that you can. And we all play different roles. We all have different personalities, different perspectives, different insights, different interests. I think we all have different styles, and we can all be effective at what we do as long as we figure that out and be the best that we can and, you know, be as courageous and honorable and truthful as we can.
The line I used to use in stories back in 2006, 2008, back in there, I haven't used it in a long time because I got sick of saying it. stand securely in your own truth and be an example to others.
Mm-hmm.
And we've both done that, and we both will continue to do that. And fortunately, we know a lot of people who are doing that. And I don't give myself the privilege of thinking we'll ever be a majority, but maybe if there are enough of it someday, we can restore some degree of sanity to the world.
Right. Well, and see, that's why I think, what you put out, the articles you put out are so important, because you really hammer home some of the most fundamental truths that as a society, as a world, certainly as a nation here in America, we all need to deal with. We all need to think about and come to grips with. And this was demonstrated in a recent article you published. The boot that stamps on your face, was this, if I understand correctly, this was actually written in 2010, I believe. And then you, right. This is like your latest article that you posted on the Tribune.
I pumped a few extra things in it, yeah.
Right, yeah. You kind of updated it and just reposted it.
Yep, that's what we're dealing with. It's like, the jury's still out on the human race. There's a very strong possibility that we're going to go extinct. And it's going to be our own fault. And if that's the case, that'll just be too bad. But as long as it hasn't happened yet, we're going to struggle mightily to make sure it doesn't happen.
Yes, and in order to do that, we need to come to grips with some very harsh realities. And in this article, I just read this article the other night, and there's two sections that really stood out to me. And by the way, guys, this article is at the Renegade Tribune, which we talked about at the beginning of this program. Be sure to check it out. You have here in 19. During the Bolshevik Revolution, right at the beginning of the Bolshevik Revolution.
Oh, yeah.
You say here, you kind of summarize the situation. You say here, a trainload of Jews from Brooklyn carrying $40 million in gold bullion traveled across Europe and wound up occupying 363 of the 388 seats in the new Bolshevik assembly after these quote-unquote humanitarian Jewish revolutionaries cut up the Tsar and his family into little pieces and burned them. May not have noticed, but philosophical descendants of these killers are the people now in charge of the United States. And that's exactly right. We have to understand that look, the people that destroyed Russia and, as you say here, cut up the Tsar and his family, literally murdered these people in the most brutal fashion imaginable, not just the Tsar, but really the entire, imperial Russian government, which perhaps did have its faults. But at the same time, I don't think you can make the argument that these people deserve to be chopped up into pieces and brutalized in the way that they were. These people that did that were not only in the United States, the primary funders of the Bolshevik Revolution were Jews on Wall Street, in New York City, in London. But these people later came to dominate and control the United States federal government, obviously our media, obviously our banking system.
You can judge a civilization.
In America, and we need to wake up to that fact.
You can judge a civilization by its art. And
right.
The art of Tsarist Russia in terms of music and in terms of literature is much greater than the United States, and it's probably second in world history to Germany. And the Jews were hell-bent on destroying both of those countries because they had to destroy the human impulses of art and music in order to take over the world and create their desolation that they're working so hard to achieve so they can. Can you imagine a world controlled by Jews? It's going to be a giant ghetto, and they're working very hard to achieve it, and they almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's you're spot on. There was a second section in here that really stood out to me, and I copied and pasted this here in my notes. And, this is kind of a theme we've talked about already on this program, but let me just read this really quick and then I'll get your response. You say here, most importantly, now is the time to clearly identify this potentially fatal influence on world society, because not to do so guarantees that no problem of meaningful significance will ever be solved, because the underlying motivational forces of them remain undiscussed and undisclosed. It's impossible to really know anything under these circumstances. And that's where the public remains today, permanently in the dark, and you're specifically referring to Jewish influence on our world and on America specifically.
It's made us all sick and it's killing us.
You know what it is? And the older I get, the more I look at this, it's just so – it's not only unacceptable. I just find this whole – political correct nonsense where we can't talk about Jews, we can't, you know, independently think for ourselves, we can't critically examine what we're being told. I find it so childish and weak and just totally contrary to who I am as an individual. And it's just unacceptable. I mean, this is just, I will never go along with this ever again. I mean, right. I'd rather die than, you know.
Right.
It's just, like, to me, I feel that strongly about it. I mean, this is absolutely unacceptable. It's just, and it's childish. The tactics that they use, you know, the little stupid names that they call you, a racist or an anti-Semite or a conspiracy theorist. It's just, this is, you know, I don't even have words. I mean, it's just unacceptable. It's absolutely unacceptable, and it's intolerable.
I believe that humans are the highest life form in the universe. And until we know that there's somebody higher, we have to believe that, and we have to aspire toward being that. And the Jews, in their fear, want to turn us all into robots that they can control. And the people who are trying to do that, I take a little look at the Hasids who live in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. And they have a culture where all the old men are allowed to take all the little boys and bring them into their bathhouses and rape them. And these are the Jews who grow up to be our stockbrokers and our politicians. And they are the people who want to run the world, and they're really sick, and they need to be stopped, and they need to be isolated from the rest of the world.
Absolutely. And speaking of that, I just read an article the other day where, and I mean, this is typical. This, you know, it seems like every other week there's a story along these same lines.
Right.
Where these rabbis, as you say, will like, they'll be exposed. They'll get caught, you know, raping little kids, fondling little kids.
Yeah.
You know, just doing really sick and, you know, pedophilic type activities and behaviors. And the whole entire congregation will support the rabbi.
Right.
You know, and demand that criminal charges be dropped.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's a case, and this happens not only here in America, but all over the world, anywhere Jews are.
Yep.
You see situations in Australia at synagogues and Shabbat, you know, schools or whatever they are. And you know, these rabbis are caught raping little kids, and they get off the hook. It happens in Israel. It happens all over. Now, that's not to say that there aren't Jews that are, you know, trying to expose this and put an end to it. There certainly are. I mean, you can find their articles and their testimony on the internet. But generally speaking, this is something that is covered up and permitted by the organized Jewish community, and it seems by a lot of Jews, you know, as individuals, as members of these various congregations and schools and whatnot. They're okay with this type of behavior. And if that doesn't show you that there's something so evil, I mean, really, just evil with these people. I mean, they really are. I mean, these, you know, we've seen the videos of the little babies having their penises sucked by these rabbis, and they're getting herpes, and they're getting, you know, it's just,
yeah, I'm dying.
What kind of barbarity is this?
It's an insanity.
It is insane. I mean, it's absolutely insane. And then you turn on the television, and, you know, you have interracial couples left and right. You have homosexuals all over. You have just utter, you know, gutter trash degeneracy. being promoted and elevated and, you know, made to look like it's the coolest thing ever. And of course, all of this comes from the mind of a Jew.
They are the minority that rules the world, and they're elevating all the minorities to overcome the majority. And it's time for the majority to rise up in a righteous way and say, no, this is not who humans are. And we need to extirpate these people from society. We need to make it impossible for them to flourish. And right now, just the opposite is true. It's impossible for us to flourish. And it's up to ordinary, heterosexual, white people to say, we need to establish a righteous world. We need to have all our religions get along because there's only one God. And we need to purge ourselves from these homicidal maniacs who have figured out that if they control the money, they can control the whole world. So we need to take the money away from them, and we need to regain our freedom in whatever way we can. I see no sign of this happening, but that doesn't mean it can't happen. It must happen if we're going to survive, and we will survive, but we need to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. You know, real quick, I know we're probably going to be wrapping up here in the next few minutes, but I'm curious, what is, if you could offer somebody, you know, one or two pieces of advice to detoxify their brain, to, you know, cleanse their soul.
It's hard
from,
you know,
this Jewish poison that, yeah, you know, we're constantly consuming.
When kids are molested as children, you know, I've come to believe that there's no such thing as a natural homosexual, and I found that reading a Christian piece that showed a study of twins where I'm not sure the line. In order to become a homosexual, you have to be molested. You have to have something bad happen to you when you're a child, and then you become predisposed to be a homosexual. So this whole legalizing of homosexuality back in the 70s was really a big mistake, because it ruins kids for life. Homosexuals seek out children to molest because that's just who they are. So the sickness spreads in that way. And to have a body of psychiatrists say this is just an alternative lifestyle was one of the great scams that was played on society, and it needs to be reversed because it's a sickness. It's a sociological sickness that has been created, and it's destroying the family. Kids who are molested in the first grade will never raise normal families. And it's the family structure that needs to be maintained, because there is nothing, absolutely nothing more important in the whole world than a mother bonding with her baby. That's what makes healthy human beings. And to create homosexuals denies that from ever happening, and creates a dysfunctional population that will, instead of having the pleasure of watching a normal family grow, they turn to perversions and bloody murder. And this is creating a big problem in the world, where instead of raising happy families, we have society atomized into alienated individuals, feeling constant pain, who need to act out that pain and go out and kill somebody. And we see a lot of that happening in the world now. And the Jews want that to happen because destabilization of societies is their main aim. We see it happening all over the world. And when they have societies completely destabilized, the only place anybody can turn for help is the state. And then the Jews control everyone.
Right. Well, and see, yeah, I agree with you. But it's not only that they destabilize countries, and there have been, you know, very effective techniques that they have used to destabilize American society, which we've talked about on previous shows, I've written about, you've written about. homosexuality is a key one. Immigration, you know, we could go on here. Sexual degeneracy in general. They have all these different techniques that they use to destabilize countries. But then they also, because their influence in the media is so poisonous, they literally invert everything. They invert our natural world. Yeah. They invert our healthy, traditional, truly normal social norms, cultural norms, sexual norms. You name it. They literally invert everything and turn it upside down.
The Frankfurt School taught everybody to hate their own families.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, that's the way we need to understand, the Jewish parasite. Tan Stoffel from Age of Treason, talked quite a bit about how Jews. Him. Yeah, he's good. I think he's brilliant. I think he's one of the better.
Gaslighting.
Better. Yeah. He's done a lot of really good stuff. He's a very insightful and just knowledgeable person. I mean, the guy's really thought hard about a lot of these subjects, and I think he's right. I mean, he kind of criticizes other people, not in a hostile way, but just makes his point of view known if he disagrees with a particular issue. And I think he, makes a great case every time he does that. In the gaslighting thing and the white pathology, what do they call it? I can't even think. The stuff that McDonald and Jared Taylor and all these other guys were on. Pathological altruism, he's right. Been very critical of that because you have to identify the source of that pathological altruism, and that source is the Jewish parasite that has infected our society and infected our minds.
Yep.
And without identifying that, I think you're missing a huge piece of the puzzle.
You're going to be going around in circles if you can't do that. So I've been saying for years that whatever sociological problem you're looking at, you should immediately turn to a search for Jewish influence for the problem. You save yourself all this time investigating other angles when the number one angle on most problems is Jewish manipulation of reality.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yes, it's very true, and you've been hammering these points home for a number of years. I've tried to kind of pick up in your, in your footsteps and add my own little take on it.
I hate to use a football metaphor, but I know you can relate to it. when Tom Brady was talking about Andrew Luck, he said, "You can do a lot of things that I wish I could do, and I feel that way about you."
Okay. Well, thank you for that. I appreciate it. Yeah. And I mean, there's tons of other people out there, very similar to me. I think, and this is another thing that kind of resonated with me with the whole cuckservative drama, the whole cuckservative theme that got started is it really shows that we have, our cause, the sort of pro-white, anti-Jewish, not anti-Semitic, not anti-Zionist, anti-Jewish, not anti-Israel, anti-Jewish.
Right. Exactly.
The guys that think like us, we really have the best talking points. I mean, we know what we're talking about. We know these issues left and right. We can engage in an intellectual dialogue with anybody and pretty much dominate, I think. That is very encouraging to me. Like, we have a lot of very bright people, very honorable people. very knowledgeable and dedicated people involved in this. And I think we're only going to make more and more progress as we continue here.
It's so mad. My voice is giving out. It's so maddening when people come along and insist that, it's not all the Jews. There's other people involved in it as well. And, I've had so many of these arguments over time. I try to stay away from them now because they're pointless. And it's like, I think it's people hiding behind their own ignorance who try to do that. But it just shows that they haven't really absorbed the full horror of what the Jews have done to the world over the past several thousand years, where they have been a negative influence wherever they've gone and have polluted country after country and been thrown out of most of them. But with the ascendance of the Rothschilds, they were able to bribe a sufficient number of people to take over many countries, and now they've taken over most countries because they've been able, through bribery, blackmail, and murder, to influence the people who lead the country. And it, you know, it makes me think of Cynthia McKinney's remarks, where she wasn't even allowed to run for Congress unless she signed a document saying she would support Israel. If she didn't sign that document, she couldn't get the money for the loans to conduct the campaign. And that's really how the Jews have taken over the governments in every country. They've just squeezed everybody out by their astute use of money. And, you know, doing that is choking the life out of the whole world.
Mm-hmm. You know, and one final comment, and then we'll wrap up here. Okay. The people that say, oh, well, you know, it's not all the Jews. You know, there's a couple good Jews out there. And no doubt, I mean, I think that there are some Jews out there that are doing some at least interesting work, doing some useful work. I think Gilad Atzmon comes to mind. Brother Nathaniel comes to mind. I'm not endorsing these people by any means.
Yeah.
I'm simply saying that some of the information that they're putting out is good. You know, I think it does a lot of what they say is true, and it, you know, they're raising some important issues and tackling some of these subjects from a unique perspective, which I think is good. That being said, I think the only proper way to understand the Jewish problem or the Jewish question is from a racial perspective. And once you do that and you recognize that the Jews are this, you know, call them a race, call them an anti-race, whatever they are, they're certainly not us. They're not white. They're hostile to whites. And frankly, none of them need to be in any of our countries.
That's right.
And that includes Gilad Atzmon, and that includes Brother Nathaniel, and every other good Jew out there.
Yep.
I mean, frankly, I can respect these people and engage in dialogues with them,
right,
and read what they have to say, but they don't need to be in my country. I mean, they can go to Israel. They have their own Jewish country.
Yeah.
We want a white country, period.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's all sorts of ins and outs that goes into that. There's all sorts of issues we'd have to solve before we could get there. But ultimately, that's what we need. That is entirely legitimate. It's entirely righteous and honorable and just. There's nothing wrong with saying that. It is the morally correct position. It is intellectually correct and philosophically correct. And we have nothing to be ashamed of. And saying that does not make me a hater or a racist or anything like that. That's just how the world has operated for centuries, and it's how it should operate going forward, and we need to recognize the subversive role of the Jews in destroying that natural order.
Exactly.
And I think you've been instrumental in doing that, and I don't know if you have any concluding remarks, but I definitely want to thank you for coming on here tonight. This has been a very interesting conversation. We kind of had a little ragtag program thrown together here because Blog Talk Radio is somewhat unreliable at times, but I think we did okay given the circumstances.
Back in the day, I and a few friends were trying to put together a list of the top 10 Jews who were most like human beings, and we could never find 10. We could get to 4 or 5. Or maybe 6 or 7, but we never quite made it to 10.
And that doesn't surprise me.
There's Jews who appear to be on the side of humanity, like Paul Eisen runs a good website down in Australia or New Zealand. I forget which it is, but he's often quoted by Robert Forrest on for his astute comments about the Holocaust. Christopher John Bjorknes has written some good pieces over time, very candid about the Jews. And you got Shlomo Sand, who blew the whistle on the Jewish homeland by saying there never was a Jewish homeland. And all of these Jews kind of cohered from throughout the world. There were some Berbers and some Khazars, and they met in Spain and claim they had a history in the Middle East. But you start looking around, and I'm reminded of one of the most powerful things I've ever seen was Martinson's The Myth of the Good Jew. And if you're going to insist, if there are some people out there who are going to insist that it's not all Jews, I suggest you look around for Jews who can tell a real story about the Holocaust, can be candid about the behavior of Jewish rabbis in biting the penises of children and stealing people's kidneys, and are candid about the slaughter of the people in Gaza. And I suggest that if you look for a Jew who is up to speed on all three of those things, that you won't find one.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think you're right. And I'm still waiting for one single Jew to support the concept of a white nation for white people. And I think I'll be waiting a long time before I find a Jew that would support that paradigm of public policy. Well, John, thank you very much for coming on the show tonight. I really appreciate it. As always, it's a pleasure and an honor to speak with you. And I'm sure we'll be talking soon.
Thanks.
Of course, John, I will be talking to you soon. And I just wanted to tell the audience, thanks for tuning in on this Wildcard Edition. Stay positive, stay focused, and really try to be productive each and every day. Do something positive to advance this cause in whatever way you can. I think we all have a role to play. We all approach these subjects from different angles, from different perspectives, and we can all be effective as long as we resolve to be and be the best champions of this information and of this cause as we can. So with that said, again, I want to thank John Kaminsky for appearing on the program tonight, and I'd like to thank Kyle for giving me the opportunity to host my show tonight. And we're going to go ahead and close out. This is a song called Sedona by Houndmouth. Thanks for tuning in, guys.
See ya. Yes. Host.
shot the blood and I